Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Controlled and accomplished at Spurs, out of control and needing another couple of magical moments of brilliance from our Portuguese duo in Italy. Another chaotic week at Manchester United. Questions answered, critics quietened on Saturday, and then questions posed and critics proven right on Tuesday. Welcome to the Manchester United Weekly Podcast with me, Harry Robinson, and Jack Tate. We delayed recording last week to let things develop after the catastrophic Liverpool result, and then we did so again this week to see whether Saturday's win at Spurs was indicative of improvement overall, or a one-off, or a bit of both. And the answer is probably the latter, it seems. There's now the small matter of a Manchester derby on Saturday lunchtime, and we'll preview that as well. And then we'll be answering some questions from our patrons throughout the show instead of in the normal bonus Q&A at the end. Jack, let's begin with Spurs, I think, because it was a result, it was a performance, in fact, we learned more from, I think. A display of resilience and a certain amount of bravery and a good performance. And then after that, we'll get onto the drama of Italy in Bergamo. Tottenham, we saw, a resilient squad, a resilient manager. And it was this strange kind of balance where I don't think it was papering over the cracks, because I think it was a good performance from the players and the manager, but it's also not a long-term solution. But a very good day for Ole and United on Saturday, at least.
Yeah, I think looking at the Spurs game in isolation, forget for a second what it might mean going forward. I actually thought the Spurs game was about as impressive as we could have hoped for coming off the back of the Liverpool game. Yeah. I think that Spurs game, obviously with the terrible result the week before, the reports that Ole had three games to save his job, the fact that there were sections of our fan base almost wanting us to lose, I think that Spurs game was a potential hiding to nothing for United and for Solskjaer. There was very little that could be gained from that game, because I think you put in a good performance and it can be, one week ago you lost 5-0 to Liverpool. You put in a bad performance and obviously the critics are getting even louder. Solskjaer's potentially out of a job. And also we were playing against the Spurs team that are themselves not in a good run of form. But I actually think we came out of it with about as positive a result and as positive a performance and as positive a mindset as it was possible to come out of that game with, for two reasons. One, we obviously played well, but I think more importantly, we played well with Cristiano Ronaldo, and with Cristiano Ronaldo as a huge focal point of everything that we were doing on the ball. And he has obviously been the centre of a lot of, maybe not the criticism, but has been given as a big reason as to why this United team hasn't been able to play. And then second, because it came about due to a tactical change that sort of proved that, at least in some games, Solskjaer really does have the ability and the capacity as manager to set us up in a way that is beneficial to the team and maximises the parts that we have. So I actually think there was a lot of positives to take from the Spurs game in isolation. Obviously, extrapolating from that and what it means going forward was a much harder conversation. And I think what we saw against Atalanta probably proves that the Spurs game probably isn't a huge, a huge harbinger of things to come. But I think that performance in isolation, it's very unfashionable and unpopular at the moment to say anything positive about United, but I think they actually deserved a lot of credit for that performance against Spurs.
I think in fairness, Solskjaer and United did get a lot of credit for that. And I think it was because it was so clearly a really poor Spurs team, really poor. And maybe they were even worse against us than we were against Liverpool, possibly. Some people have suggested that, but I think everyone gave, pretty much everyone except the kind of talk sport, attention-seeking critics gave Solskjaer a lot of credit, because not only was it very good, but it was brave to change system when he was under so much pressure. He handled the media well all throughout the week. And this is one of his great qualities, is his ability to deal with these negative moments in a dignified and humble manner, and to come out of them and for at least in the short term, we'll see about the long term, but turn it around slightly. Spurs were terrible, but I think what was so impressive was just, it was a very controlled United performance. I think the most controlled performance of the season, definitely, if not the best, but I think probably the best. The defence was compact and tight. Everyone knew their roles very well. The players were put into positions that suited them. Varane gave us some proper defensive leadership from the back. I thought Wan-Bissaka was excellent. McTominay was excellent in a lot more. It seemed like he'd been liberated from those defensive duties, which sometimes consume him. And yeah, the key to it was the defensive framework. And that obviously comes down to numbers, obviously. And there's a point being made that if you play three at the back, it's because you don't trust the defenders. And that's probably true. I think that is true. And given how much we spent on the defence, not good enough. But the defensive frame, it was a proper structure where people knew their roles. And it meant the whole team had a structure. So you didn't see, and this wasn't just the defence, but clearly Bruno Fernandes had a proper role. He wasn't this wandering, free roaming player. He was the number 10. In the formation, and he slotted back into right central midfield when necessary, and that was completely essential. In other games against other teams, maybe better teams, maybe worse teams, and then I think that two-man strike force of Ronaldo and Cavani could be really isolated and Bruno will look and be frustrated. But that setup obviously can work, and it allows for proper kind of pressing structure as well, because someone like McTominay and Fred could go forward with the knowledge that they had a bit of cover, an extra man behind them. So it was both obviously just on a sheer numbers point, but also it was clearly well drilled, that team. And that, I think the biggest criticism everyone will always say of Solskjaer United is you look at them and think, have they actually done this on the train? Like, do they look like they've been doing this on the training ground? Is there a clear idea? And this was a proper, you knew United had been working this on the training ground and it paid off.
Yeah, and the point on the three-man defence, I think you do generally, you use a three-man defence because you don't trust your defenders. I think that is, especially when you don't always default to a three-man defence. You know, in say Tuchel or Conte's case, maybe not, because that is sort of their system. But in the case of something like this, where you're changing to a three-back, I think, yes, absolutely you do it because you don't trust your defence. But that doesn't mean that just by slapping three, you know, an extra centre-back on the pitch and having three centre-backs and two full-backs on the pitch doesn't automatically mean that your defence is better. You know, I instantly, as I was thinking about that as you were speaking, Harry, was reminded of, I think it was 2015 when United went to the Emirates and played three at the back with Tyler Blackett at left centre-back. And it was all over the place. It was one of the worst defensive performances I've ever seen from United. It was when, only 3-0 down, wasn't it? In like 20 minutes.
Yeah, I was there. I was sitting in the home end for that one. I remember with my dad, and I think it was Schweinsteiger had been told to mark Cazorla, and Cazorla just dragged him all over the pitch. And the massive holes, and 3-0 down.
And so that's what I mean. Just because you slap an extra centre-back on the pitch, it doesn't automatically mean that you suddenly become this great defensive team. It takes structure, it takes organisation, and it might be a little bit easier.
It does help when the centre-back's Rafael Varane.
It does. And don't get me wrong, it is easier to create that defensive structure when you do have an extra defender on the pitch. Absolutely it does. But it doesn't just come out of thin air. It still requires, you know, a lot of work to make that happen. And so, you know, I think there was a lot of good that came out of that. I thought what was particularly pleasing was how aggressive we were in defence. Sometimes with a three-man defence, you can be sort of caught up in having all of those players in defence. And the benefit of three at the back is generally that you always have at least one, often two, spare defenders. And so when either a striker drops deep or a midfielder pushes up, you can go and engage really high up the pitch with some of your best defenders. And sometimes when you play three at the back, you get sort of caught in this idea that the whole point of three at the back is that you have more defenders back. And so you don't go and engage high up the pitch. But United were brilliant at that. The first goal comes from Maguire, basically being, I can't remember who it was now, it might have been Højbjerg, but whoever it was, he was, you know, almost on the edge of Spurs' box, pressing the ball. We win it back and Fernandes clips it over to Ronaldo. You know, those sort of moments were very, very good for United. again, obviously the question about it was, is three at the back sustainable? No, it's not, because A, the optics of playing three at the back when you're playing worse teams is simply not good enough at United. And also it doesn't suit our team. The depth that we have is in the forwards and the wingers. And this formation that we can means that we can basically only play three attacking players. In this case, it was Fernandes, Ronaldo and Cavani. And then on the bench, you've got, you know, Rashford, Greenwood, Sancho, Van der Beek, Lingard, and Martial. Yeah. There are just too many United attackers to make that formation sustainable. We've got a couple of questions on that,
and we'll go into it more in a second. But I think that Bruno Fernandes off the ball is kind of the indicator of how well set up United are, because he has just been, I think it's the most obvious that's been wrong this season is just how, because his defensive work rate is brilliant, and his contribution is massive. And then you saw this season kind of him pressing kind of in instead of Ronaldo, going up next to Ronaldo and then in front of him and pressing the keeper, and it just left these massive gaps. And instead, against Spurs, it was clear he had a specific role. He had basically had two different positions, in and out of possession. He was number 10 in possession, the right central midfielder out of possession, and that's some sophistication. And before we talk about the sustainability of the three at the back, and I agree with what you said, and we can more on that in a sec, but some credit for Solskjaer came in. The players had Monday off after the battering on Sunday, which is normal after a Sunday game. If there's no midweek game, it wasn't a decision taken after defeat. But for Solskjaer, I mean, the pressure he was under is just completely unimaginable to any of us, I think. The world's media reporting on your job being on the line and scrutinising your every move and every word for the next 6 days or whatever. But he, credit, and this doesn't mean I think he should have been safe from the sack. That doesn't mean any of that. But just credit for the fact that he came in having thought about it on Monday, Sunday evening and Monday, and came in on Tuesday with a very clear plan and set it out to his players while under that massive pressure to take some, not just ability, but incredible attitude and mentality. And I think he was given a lot of credit, but I don't think it's kind of recognised just how hard that is.
Especially when it's a formation that you don't play regularly. You know, this United, when was the last time we played three at the back? I'm actually not sure. It's got to be about a year ago.
About 18 months ago, I think, yeah.
I mean, was it actually, did we play three at the back when we played PSG last year? When Twanzebe played brilliantly against Mbappe?
Yeah, Twanzebe came in.
Yeah.
And that was October. So just over, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, that's not easy to just do that in 4 or 5 days on the training ground, especially when really the guy that you want spearheading that defence is a guy who's been at the club for 4 months in Varane. Obviously a very, very good and accomplished player, but it's not easy to accomplish that. And also to have, as I said, it's somewhat easy to set up a three-man defence on their own, but to have the defensive structure with the midfield and the attack as well, that clearly shows that there is the ability in this United coaching staff to create very good tactics and to create very good game plans like this.
Yeah.
So, like I said, it's difficult to take too much out of the Spurs game, because the game we've seen since then maybe didn't discredit what we saw in the Spurs game, but at least called into question how often we're going to be able to produce it.
Yeah.
But that game in isolation, I think there wasn't much that was that positive that you could potentially go and take out of that game before it started. I certainly felt like there was pretty much only bad things could come out of this game. And even if you put in a good performance, there was very little that could be taken out of it. But I think, especially because the performance wasn't just based on United has better players than Spurs, it was United has better players than Spurs and they are set up better than Spurs. It was about as positive as we could have been after that game.
Spurs were rubbish and are rubbish.
They were.
And we'll see how they do on the Conte now. We had a question.
It's quite funny now to think that that game probably was effectively loser gets Conte.
Yeah, although I don't actually think that's true. I think Spurs losing meant they got Conte, but I think us losing didn't change too much, really. I think the pressure would have been massive, but I don't think he would have been sacked immediately after that. Not at all. I think it is. We had a question from one of our patrons, Corey Lennox, who said, we saw the formation we wanted. We got the result we wanted. Overall performance still wasn't the best. Does this change anything for Ole, and can he actually save his job? I think he can save his job if we saw a lot more of that. What I thought afterwards is it does sometimes take a wake-up call for managers, and good managers shouldn't and wouldn't let it take so long. The warning signs have been there all season for United, and Solskjaer should have made a change earlier than he did. But it did. Liverpool could have been the wake-up. Now, what we saw against Atalanta wasn't enough, but to take Antonio Conte, you mentioned that he always plays three at the back, and well, not always, but you said, yeah, his normal is to play three at the back, but when he started at Chelsea, he played with a four, and then they got beaten comprehensively at Arsenal playing a four-man defence, and I think it might have even been at half-time of that game, but certainly afterwards he switched to a three-man defence and they soon won the league. And it's happened with other managers. Fergie often switched things after big defeats. Managers do it all the time. They do sometimes need a wake-up call, because you kind of, it happens in all of life, but also in football, where you're set along a path and you kind of don't realise what's going on. And you should. So yeah, if that was the wake-up call and then this is Atalanta is a blip, then yeah, he can save his job. But I think Atalanta really showed us the same as we've seen many, many times before. Should we talk first? In fact, just before we move on from Spurs and go on to Atalanta, and then after that, we'll talk about the future of the formation. A word, because the goals against Atalanta were great, but a word for the goals at Spurs, which were all absolutely brilliant as well. Ronaldo with two moments of brilliant quality, and Rashford off the bench, who's scored three goals in his first four games back, which is serious, and he looks properly fresh and exciting.
Yeah, I mean, it was just brilliant to watch. I mean, the first goal, there's not much more that you can say about them, to be honest. I mean, I think it's actually gone under the radar, I think, how good Bruno Fernandes has been this season. You know, he hasn't been putting up the goal contributions that had been last season, especially not the goals itself. But I mean, he's still, the amount of chances he creates is still absolutely phenomenal. It is honestly kind of ridiculous, the volume of chances that he creates. I think what I loved about the first goal, so like I mentioned earlier, it comes from us pressing very high up the pitch. It comes from Maguire winning the ball back. And then, I mean, what more can you say about Fernandes and Ronaldo? The ball over the top, the finish, the camera angle on TV was perfect behind the volley as well, because often those sort of goals, you're sort of running in the right direction to just sort of volley it ahead. But Ronaldo, the angle he had to get on that volley to get it into the far corner,
yeah,
as it's dropping over, was it Romero's head or Davies's head? It's just sublime.
Yeah.
And then the other goals, I mean, Rashford took his goal brilliantly. Cavani and Ronaldo linked up beautifully there.
You talk about Fernandes and Ronaldo, and then we've also seen again against Atalanta.
Yeah.
Another moment of just brilliant. The awareness first for the Ronaldo volley against Spurs, you see Fernandes look up when he receives the ball, he looks up, and within like a split second, he sees it. And then the execution of that pass is incredible. The way it hangs in the air just over Davies' head and drops perfectly. The flight of the ball.
It's so difficult to do. With the ball still at his feet as well, that's a little bit easier to play a pass that if the ball's rolling towards you. But with it from basically a dead ball, to clip that with that sort of flight on it is so difficult.
Yeah, yeah, incredible. Brilliant finish from Rashford and Cavani, obviously, but we knew that. But Rashford's choosing exactly the right finish in that situation. Sometimes we've seen him mess those up. Sometimes it's needed like one in three for him to score. But so far, I'd say he's converting kind of one in every two big chances probably since he came back.
Yeah.
Which is great.
And Fernandes, by the way, leading the league in chances created with 23.
Yeah.
Ahead of Trent Alexander-Arnold. And only four of those have come from set pieces, compared to Trent and Matt Ritchie, who are second and third, both have 10 from set pieces. So, you know, his creative ability is quite incredible at the moment.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that he may not be producing the goals that he was last season.
Yeah. And I think he's frustrating more than ever, I think. Partly because United are losing, of course, and drawing games. But he is, even against Spurs, the number of times he was losing possession was frustrating. But then those moments of magic happen and it becomes worth it.
Preparing for that all over again this week against Man City when we're defending for 85 minutes and we finally win the ball back and Bruno tries a 60-yard pass that goes straight out of play.
Yeah, yeah. But that's him. It's beautiful when it works, and you just have to remember that when it doesn't. Ronaldo and Cavani together, great fun. Love that. And we've spoken about Ronaldo and many other people, but I just want to emphasise just how much I love Edinson Cavani. He is just, I mean, I was saying this to my brother I got back from Bergamo a few hours ago. We're recording this just after I came back from the airport. I've said there before match, I honestly think Cavani's probably in my top three, top five favourite United players ever already. Just absolutely adore him. The way he plays, his attitude, is the way he lifts the team as well. He's brilliant. Let's talk Atalanta. Again, two amazing goals from Ronaldo. I think a lot, we've done some of the talking already on that, and lots of other people have done so. It's a decent result in the Champions League, made less decent by the fact we lost to Young Boys on the first game. And the manner in which it was achieved was poor, I think. And these kind of results in isolation seem all right, but as we've said, they're part of the wider problem. It's not good enough to be doing these. This is it was a game like Villa, like Everton, like
Villarreal.
Villarreal. My brain has erased many of them already from this season, but it's a game we've seen before and we will see again, I think. It was obviously a massive shame that Varane went off, but even before that, I don't think we were playing particularly well. Pogba and Maguire were rubbish. The three-man defence gave me some confidence at the start, but it didn't give us the same defensive solidity. I don't think Pogba playing helped. I think it's one of those where he's not being scapegoated. The game wasn't his fault, but I think just the last 2 weeks of Paul Pogba have just been so poor. Coming on against Liverpool, getting that ridiculous red. And I just don't... How many times will we trust him and be let down? I know it helps to have a fresh player in midfield and then it lets you rest a player before City, but when you combine his recent average performances, the red card against Liverpool and the fact that he won't steal, you just think, why is this guy starting for United?
I mean, he pretty much can't play in midfield now for United. I think that's kind of the point that we're at.
Yeah.
And that, like you said, this isn't him being scapegoated or anything like that, which has happened in the past. He's just simply been terrible. He's been terrible for a few weeks and these last couple of performances have kind of sealed that.
After an amazing start to the season as well.
Yeah, which makes it all the more frustrating because you saw the way that he can contribute. But basically now at this point, I think I view Pogba as basically only a viable option as a left winger. I don't think he can play in midfield for United at the moment because he's going to be in a midfield too. And especially because we are so vulnerable at the back, he can't be trusted there. It's obviously not just him. You know, Maguire was awful against Atalanta and has been really bad ever since he came back from injury. And it's really alarming, honestly, how far he's dropped off because and we mentioned it a lot last season. He was genuinely brilliant last season from about October onwards. So he got the red card for England, was on international duty.
It was after Newcastle game, I think, in October.
And from then on, he was absolutely brilliant. And this season, he was okay, you know, not unremarkable until, you know, just before the last international break. And then he was obviously, not just him, but everyone was bad against Liverpool. And against Atalanta, it was just baffling watching him. There was a point, you know, I think it was like the 93rd, 94th minute after Ronaldo scored, when an Atalanta player put a long ball into the box and Maguire's letting it drop across the face of the box when there's an Atalanta player behind him. I mean, what goes through your head as a centre-back to let that ball drop in your own box? And he ended up getting away with it and I think he may have got fouled or he went out for a throw, but it's just some of the decision-making is baffling. And it's not just them two, but I think the Atalanta game was really deflating, honestly, because we'd seen some positive signs against Spurs And it was just deflating to, you know, the ever the optimist, you kind of hope that the Spurs game was sort of a sign that the message had got across. This was a wake-up call against Liverpool, and maybe we're sort of turning a corner. Obviously, the Varane injury didn't help, but even before that, the signs were there. We obviously conceded with Varane on the pitch. And it, even before that, defensively, we didn't have the same intensity that we had. And I think that a lot of that came because the press from midfield and the forwards and the wingbacks wasn't as good, wasn't as coordinated.
I also think
it was just a really bad performance.
It just seems to me like so much of the good stuff from last season hasn't been carried over. So Solskjaer often spoke, and Shaw as well himself spoke about how a lot of the reason behind his good form was not that Telles pushed him on to be better, but that having Telles in the squad meant Shaw could come off after. And then, to be fair, it's probably also because there were five subs in a lot of competitions, so this was easier to do. But Shaw could often come off for Telles at about 60 minutes if United were winning, or Telles would play in the Europa League. And obviously there's a difference with the Champions League. But Shaw's playing pretty much every game. Telles isn't being trusted until Shaw's been injured. And he looks like he used to. Instead of the fresh and kind of all-conquering Luke Shaw we saw from about October to for about, 10 months for United in England. He was so good. Same with Maguire. Maguire, the reasons with Maguire, I have no idea. With Shaw, it just seems to me he doesn't look like as fit as he was. He doesn't look just, as energetic. And you just think, Alex Telles is sitting there. He should be used, especially if we're playing with wing backs. And it's not the only thing. There's a few things from last season. It's just think why haven't we learned from these and continued them or improved them?
It's a curious thing that so many of the players that really stepped up last season, like Maguire, like Luke Shaw, haven't been able to kind of carry that on and carry that forward.
Yeah.
It's a really, I don't say that to point finger at anyone in particular, whether it's them or the coaching staff. I honestly don't know why that's happening and who is to blame for that. But it's just a really puzzling thing that, you know, players who not only had a great last season, but also played so well at the Euros as well.
Yeah.
You know, Shaw and Maguire were, I think Maguire was nominated for player of the tournament at the Euros. And when he came back from injury, he was so good.
Man, a match against Germany.
Yeah, and he was, very, very good all tournament. Shaw was brilliant, nailed down that left back spot. You know, there's nothing obvious to suggest why they shouldn't be playing like that. In Maguire's case, maybe the Leicester game, he was rushed back, and there were reports today that supposedly he should needed like another week and was rushed back to the Leicester game. So maybe he's still carrying a bit of an injury, but I don't think that can explain all of it, because maybe physically he's not at his best shape, but it's just mental decision making that's all over the place with Maguire at the moment. You know, it's really quite puzzling how many of the players that really stepped up and played so well for a lot of last season now seem to have sort of gone back to their level before then. Yeah, and the Atalanta game, I think just to talk more generally about it, I think it was just frustrating that even if we didn't have a great performance, it would have been good to see some of that collectiveness, not necessarily in terms of like team spirit, but collectiveness in terms of the way that we played, the way that we moved as a unit. And it just wasn't there. Everything was very, very disjointed.
Yeah, I was there, and after having a lovely day in Italy, my awareness of what was going on was probably less than, my analytical part of my mind was probably less than 100%. I've watched the highlights back, but so what was the pressing like? Was it anywhere near as good as Spurs, or was it just not there at all?
No, it wasn't that it wasn't there at all. It was just that it was disjointed again. Rashford would sort of try and press quite a lot and didn't. And I don't know if this is down to Rashford or down to his teammates, but he would often go on his own. Fernandes would sometimes go on his own. But basically, I thought one of the main issues was that we didn't have the wing-backs and one of the centre-backs pushing forward like we did against Spurs. So against Spurs, you'd have, say, Cavani pressing, and then you'd have Shaw pressing as well to stop the outball to the fullback. Then you'd have Maguire stepping in to stop the outball to either Son or Kane or maybe one of the midfielders. Then you'd obviously have Fred, McTominay or Fernandes kind of bunching in that corner as well. But that just didn't seem to happen against Atalanta. If Rashford did press, maybe you'd see Fernandes come, but there were so many times that Shaw and Wan-Bissaka weren't pushing forward. So the outball to the wing back was very, very simple. Then also when we were playing three at the back, so we obviously went to four later. None of the centre backs were pushing out either.
it wasn't that Cavani being replaced by Rashford was the problem. It was Rashford was still doing the Cavani role, but he wasn't being joined.
I mean, I don't think Rashford did it quite as often and quite as well as Cavani, but it wasn't as if it was non-existent from Rashford. There was much bigger problems than just that. It was that no one was joining it. It seemed very disjointed. When Rashford did go, no one sort of joined him.
Yeah, strange. Do you think it was the right decision to stick with the three?
Yes, I think so, ultimately, because after having such a positive performance against Spurs, I don't see how you could have really gone away from that, especially when, you know, there was so much criticism and you'd had such a torrid time trying to play four at the back against Liverpool. And listen, Atalanta are nowhere near Liverpool's standard and are still a team that we should be beating. But the way that they play, I think, made three at the back a more viable strategy, a more viable tactic, because they are a team that likes to play fast football. They keep the ball a lot. This wasn't like a Villarreal type game where they were going to sit back and hit us on the counter attack. You know, they were going to come at us. They were going to press us high. And so having those extra men back there who, and you know, we've shown at least in the Spurs game that three at the back is how we press and how we work as a unit best. And I felt that that was what we needed against Atalanta. So I was fine with three at the back.
All right. We've got a few more questions and things to talk about before we go on to whether three at the back sustainable. Van der Beek and Sancho coming on was nice to see. I mean, I think it was kind of a desperate last throw of the dice, really, but they combined quite nicely. Is that the first time we've seen them together?
From a Sancho assist.
Yeah, they probably played it. They played at Young Boys together, didn't they? But then Sancho had to come off after Wan-Bissaka was sent off. So it wasn't, and they were looking good against Young Boys, to be fair. But so not the first time we've seen them together, but one of the first. And they combined nicely. They're two players who theoretically should work very well together, and they did seem to. And hopefully, we can see more of that. I do think there's a lot of different profiles of attackers in the United team, and this is kind of goes into the 3-5-2 idea. That you do have this kind of, you can, the idea that Van der Beek, Sancho and Lingard could play together, they seem like they could fit really well together. Same, I mean, even Mata could play really well with Van der Beek and Sancho. That'd be lovely to see. And then there's the other type of attacker like Rashford, Green with Ronaldo. And then there's kind of the Cavani Martial style. So there is, I do feel like there's a, you can pick out like a few different good attacks together, and Van der Beek and Sancho certainly fit together. And then, so we've got questions from, who asked them? Michael Byers, Modnaya and Dave Shevlin all asked similar questions about, is it sustainable, the 3-5-2? It's obviously a good potential tactic for certain games, definitely. But as you said way earlier in the episode, 3-4 positions, 5 strikers for 2 positions, Ronaldo, Cavani, Martial, Rashford and Greenwood, and then 4 number 10s for the 1 position, Bruno, Lingard, Sancho and Van der Beek. And that's not even including Mata, but I don't think we do need to include him. But yes, 9 potential players and 3 players. It doesn't quite work. Ronaldo's going to play 2 in every 3, isn't he? And then I don't think Greenwood can really play alongside Ronaldo that well, although obviously Greenwood got the assist for Ronaldo's goal and he did play well when he came on. I don't think Rashford and Ronaldo works. I think the ideal is Ronaldo and Cavani, or maybe Ronaldo and Van der Beek or Sancho is kind of a deeper striker. And then I think the other players can play well together as well. But it's not sustainable having that many great attackers on the bench. And Dave asked about, are we concerned about how little Sancho's been in the team? It is concerning because we chased him for so long. We said this last week as well, I think maybe the week before, but yeah, it is concerning. I don't know why. I don't think it's mismanagement of Sancho directly. I think it's the mismanagement of the team has led to not a bad start for Sancho, but less good than we would have hoped.
I mean, when you look at it from sort of a big picture, we chased this guy for 2 years. He was seen as sort of the answer to all of our problems, maybe not all of our problems, but you know, the answer to a lot of our problems in attack, finally giving us a right wing option. And he's come in after we chased him for 2 years. He hasn't been played in his right position. I don't think he's played on the right once yet at United, certainly not from the start. He's then been rotated in and out of the team, not really given as many opportunities as he should. When we needed a goal against Atalanta for over half an hour last night, he comes on for the final 5 minutes. You know, he didn't hit the ground running at United. We have to acknowledge that. but he's also not been put in a position to succeed. He's largely been set up to fail at United, and that is a really sad position to be in when this wasn't a transfer that sort of came out of nowhere. This is a guy we chased for 2 years and we're planning for, and the mismanagement, I think, is really indicative of just how poorly this squad has been managed and how we're struggling to get the most out of a very talented group of players. So yeah, I am concerned. I hope they'll get more opportunities. And I was honestly very surprised that he didn't start against Atalanta, because I thought that would sort of the perfect opportunity to get him some game time.
There's just been so many opportunities where you think this would be great for Sancho. And then, sometimes he comes on for the last five, but he needs more than that. Has he played a full 90 minutes yet?
And last night was a great one, not even just from the start, but I mean, we went behind. It was, I can't remember the exact minute, but it was 50 something. It was like 57 minutes, I think, when we went behind. You know, it was 35 minutes of that game where we had to respond and Sancho was sat on the bench until 85.
Yeah.
That just doesn't make sense.
And I mean, Greenwood came on ahead of him for Varane. Greenwood did well, to be fair, but it's not a slight against him, but just pointing that out.
And Cavani came on ahead of him as well. Which, you know, not necessarily a wrong decision, but you have a guy on the bench who's one of the best, has been one of the best creators in world football in the last 3 years, and you've kept him on the bench until 5 minutes to go.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. We better move on to the City game unless there's anything more from Atalanta. Oh, the only thing I wanted to say, which I was saying to you before recording, Jack was asking how the equaliser was in the away end, and it was brilliant. It was lovely because Atalanta have renovated their stadium, but the away end is still a shithole, basically. It's the outside of the stadium, even like the outside, but also the inside is all modern everywhere except the away end, which is still old and like tiny plastic seats on concrete. But it has like a big, you're quite far from the pitch, but it has like a big open bit you can just walk around in behind a fence. So you can't see the pitch from it, but it was nice to just, it was like a concourse by the pitch. So cool away, but yeah, brilliant celebrations and it was loud tonight, and the atmosphere from the Atalanta fans was brilliant as well. Felt like very special being there for the Champions League music. Celebrations were great, but I was just thinking, why did we celebrate so much after the second goal? Should have been going for the win. I mean, Ronaldo led it, and then I guess if you're his teammates, you're not going to not go with him. And I get, like, he's obviously a huge relief and release of energy, especially after a goal like that. But I did just think, come on, get back to the halfway line and let's go for the winner. Obviously the VAR check put a slight dampener on it as well, even though it stood in the end. Let's move on to City and talk about Varane's injury. He's out for 4 weeks. At least two of those will be for the international break, so it's not as bad as it could be, but he's going to miss City, Villarreal away, probably Chelsea, I would think, and Watford away. And then maybe, I guess he could be back for Palace or Arsenal. Those are both at the start of December. Simon asks, what are your thoughts on the defence working right now? And what do you think the value of Varane is for our defence? We look like a completely different team when he plays. I think that's true. He's just as Solskjaer said as well, he's such a calming influence. He's such a good player. It is a massive miss. Especially if Maguire was in good form and Shaw was in good form, it wouldn't matter so much, but they're not. And we need Varane, and it's for him to get injured again is very frustrating, especially out of City, which is going to be a very difficult and possibly horrific game.
Yeah, it was a massive blow to see him go down. And he was so important against Spurs as well. And you're thinking that three at the back is really seemed like a bit of our last hope in this run of games to, you know, stay sort of solid at the back. And so, yeah, it was a real, real blow to see him go down. And a month is a lot longer than I think we would have hoped. Obviously, like you said, two of those being the international break is a bit of a break for us and some good fortune. It also makes it really hard to keep going, persisting with three at the back against City, which could leave us in a world of trouble. Because now, if you really want to play three at the back, assuming that Lindelof is out, who also picked up a knock in training the day before the Atalanta game, you're probably looking at a back three of Baye, Maguire and Luke Shaw with Telles at left wing back. Now, I don't think that's a combination that A, inspires much confidence and B, has ever played together. You know, certainly not as three centre backs, all the three of them for United. So not something that inspires a lot of confidence. And I'd say it's difficult to see many positives going into this weekend.
If Lindelof is back, do you think back three? Because it's not something...
I think it will be.
Yeah. Because it's not like for Spurs, it was, although maybe we used it against Spurs in the past, but for like Atalanta, it was kind of a new thing. It was obviously, this worked, but we have played a back three against City, are probably our most regular team we've played the back three against. It was Shaw and Williams, kind of that double up of the left back before, and that worked really well. I think
if Lindelof's available, we'll play three at the back.
And to be fair, because City, the problem is dealing with City's kind of midfield runners, the ones that come from deep. Yep. It's not dealing with the striker, because Jesus plays, yes, he's there for the tap-ins sometimes, but he can play deep, and he's, I mean...
And he's been played on the right wing mostly when he has played this season.
Yeah, he might
not
play at all. So it's...
It's generally, and I think he's injured now, but it was generally been Ferran Torres playing as sort of the most advanced player in central areas.
Yeah, so you probably want that spare man to be able to track those midfield runners, but still maintain some structure. So we probably will go for it, won't we?
But again, it comes back to this thing of, if you play three at the back against City, you have to be very proactive as centre-backs about stepping out and putting pressure on the ball when those City midfielders either drop deep or push forward. Because if you let them just have the run on you, they're just going to be able to play balls in behind constantly. You can't let them have the ball unpressured in midfield. You have to be willing to step out. Like we did so well against Spurs, we have to do that against City because they don't often play without a recognised striker. There's a very, very easy scenario where you could literally end up with three of your best defenders, basically doing nothing for a lot of the game.
Yeah. We'll see how it goes. Could be difficult. We'd probably help if it was away, to be honest, because it's a lot easier to play that kind of sitting back, counter-attacking away from home than it is at home with an expectant
crowd.
And
we have a phenomenal record at the Etihad in recent years and not a great one at home against Man City.
Yeah, I was talking about that the other day as well. I was trying to remember when we last lost to the Etihad. I think it was the... Because we won there twice last season, didn't we? Or did we play them?
Last time we lost there was November 2018. We lost 3-1.
Right, yeah. Because we beat them in the League Cup second leg, even though we went out when Matic scored, and then I think he was sent off as well, wasn't he? Oh, that's really frustrating. And then Fred took that late free kick instead of Mata, and then we beat him in the league that was a great win. Yeah, probably Fred and McTominay in midfield, won't it?
Our recent record against City is even including at Old Trafford is honestly surprisingly good. We had a torrid record against them for a few years, but
it has been good.
The last two years, it's been pretty good.
Yeah, apart from League Cup semi-final first legs, that's where we seem to struggle.
Yeah.
Just to wrap up very quickly, Fred and McTominay in midfield, I would imagine Pogba can't play. Doubt Matic will come in, although he could. Might not be a bad game for him to play in. And then up front, do you think Ronaldo and Cavani again?
I would go back to them. Yeah, I think having seen how they worked against Spurs, I think you've got to.
Yeah, I think it's, as I said earlier, I think the worry with that two-man strike force and Bruno behind is this is the kind of game where they could get very isolated and very frustrated in if we don't have enough to play out from the back and get it to them. And that can be very hard against City, and they will press the wing-backs and press the centre backs as well and make it difficult. So it needs McTominay and Fred to have good games on the ball. I think they will have good games off the ball because they normally do, but it's about what they do on the ball. I think that will be key. But yeah, I think definitely Cavani, as I said, I love him. And on that note, an Edison Cavani loving, let's wrap up. Thank you for listening, everyone. For more from us throughout the week, our reaction to the City game, but we will be recording on Sunday or Monday, so you'll hear from us. But throughout the week, you can hear Jack on Twitter at
UTDTait, T-A-I-T.
And you can see what I'm saying at HarryRobinson64, and the podcast itself, every new episode and information about how to become a patron at UTDWeeklyPod. That's P-O-D at the end there. Patrons, thank you very much for your support and for your questions from all of you, and those of you who didn't send them, thank you for your support as well. And we will speak to you next week. Have a great one. Goodbye.
Network.